You're listening to The Comedy Cellar, live from the table on the Riotcast Network, riotcast.com.
Good evening, everybody. Welcome to the Comedy Cellar Show here on Sirius XM Channel 99. We're here at the back table of the Comedy Cellar. My name is Noam Dworman. I'm the owner of the Comedy Cellar. Next to me is the handsome Mr. Daniel Natterman. Hello, Dan.
I heard you got rye.
Sorry, is that your Chris Rock imitation?
Yeah, it's as best as I can do it.
Do your Maya Angelou. Angelou, I don't know.
Does my sassiness upset you?
We are joined by Gary Goldman.
I'm not an impression.
Who the New York Times called one of the greatest... one of the country's strongest comedians.
Oh. By the way, I should interject. They called him that in the crossword section. It was six down, a six-letter word for one of the country's strongest comedians. Thank you.
That's great.
Gary Goldman, one of the strongest comedians, has three TV specials and has sold out theaters throughout the country. He may be seen regularly at Le Cellar del Comedy. And Periel Aschenbrand, as I say, is a mom.
She's our producer.
She's a producer. She writes a monthly or so something like that column for Tablet magazine, which is
Tablet,
the Jewish Bible.
Yeah.
Hello.
Hi.
And she's our producer and booker. And okay, that's it. So we have Gary Goldman here.
Well, I wanted to have Gary on because it seems to me that 2019 might be the year of Goldman.
The year of the Goldman.
No, 18 was the year of the Goldman, I think.
Well, it's all downhill from here.
19 is starting off positively, and mainly I wanted to talk about Noam. You might have noticed on Twitter. I know, Noam, you're sort of absent on Twitter. You have an account, but you don't use it.
No, I don't use it.
And in fact, Noam doesn't even have a picture on his Twitter account. It's just the
Comedy Cellar
the default. No, it's just
nothing.
The default.
Oh, really?
Picture.
Just a space for a picture.
No, it's not a space. It's like that silhouette of a person.
Yeah.
Oh, man. No wonder why you don't have time to fix the Wi-Fi.
The Wi-Fi still not working?
It's not that great.
All right, let's cut the show right now. Take care of this.
No, but you don't even have time to put in a picture for your...
Oh, that's
you need
right.
an assistant. Do you have an assistant?
By the way,
I'm afraid they can't keep a secret. Go ahead.
Let's not. We got to talk also about the fat black pussycat at this time, if we could, just so I don't forget. If you wouldn't mind it, because I know Gary had.
Perry, I'll take a memo. get your
but
pad.
They have me. They don't need anything.
Gary,
I see what's going on here.
Gary has started doing on Twitter.
And Instagram.
And Instagram as well. He started doing his comedy tips, and he does them once a day.
Yes.
And they've sort of become a sort of a cult following, would you say?
Yeah, I would say a cult. Yeah. Yeah. But a benign cult. Not one of these cults
not
that,
a death
that'll
cult.
Eventually... No.
Oh, you haven't told them what you want them to do yet.
I'm grooming them.
And then
eventually they'll do my bidding.
Don't you know the five stages of
cult? They are doing your bidding, Gary, because your bidding is write.
Yeah.
And be original.
Manson didn't lead with the murders.
You don't open with the murders. You build
with the
slowly
murders.
To the murders. Yeah.
Do you do once a day, you said?
Yeah, one a day. Uh-huh. Yeah, that was my New Year's resolution.
And what pushed you into giving trade secrets out for free?
I have to be honest with you. There might be something subconscious going on, but it was just a really strong cup of coffee on December 31st that suddenly I had a lot of energy, and I said to my partner, girlfriend, future wife, Sade.
Are you engaged?
No, but... I'm moving towards that slowly.
Slowly.
Take your time.
Yeah. And I said, what do you think if people would think if I sent out a tip every day and on Twitter? She said, I think the people would love it.
Can you read some samples? You have any favorite Goldman?
They're so generous.
Well, I was going to ask Gary what
you don't have to.
I was going to ask
Gary. No, they're
Gary.
Great. Read a few.
If there was only one tip I could give, it would be to listen to your sets after you perform them and transcribe them and try to add things to them.
But they're also
apparently that's what Tracy Morgan does.
Gary, do you worry that you're giving away the store?
No, because my theory is that about 11 people will actually act on them, and if they act on them, then they deserve them, because I don't do anything
for
you.
It's deeper than that, Gary, actually. Can I tell you something? So years ago, my Bob Engelhardt, one of Panchitos on the block, you know Panchitos?
Oh, yeah.
He didn't have an employee or manual or whatever it was, and my father said, well, you could take hours. And Ava, his wife, went crazy. I spent out. What are you going to do? Like, why would you help a competitor? And he's like, it doesn't matter. You can give him all the manuals in the world.
Right.
You have to have the talent.
Really?
Yeah. And meaning, like, you could tell anybody the tips. That's actually not valuing what makes you a great comic. You came to those tips by pattern recognition of what you were doing that work, but you can't make somebody a great comic by telling
No, but
by
it's about putting
could I make
the
them
work
a better
in.
Comic?
I don't
yeah.
I,
yeah. Yeah, no, it's about putting the work in.
Marginally, you can make them a better comic. You can make them a better hack, perhaps. Perhaps, but I, you know.
So jaded.
Well, you can.
No.
Wow, that's rather cynical.
It's not jaded. No, it's not cynical.
Because
it's actually, I believe in talent.
I'm not going to say I have no talent.
No, but it's...
I wasn't like this hilarious man who was quick-witted and...
Well, I don't know if that's true either. But I think what I, after reading a lot of them in preparation for this, was like, wow. Like, as a writer myself, part of writing is really sitting down. It doesn't mean you're going to be a good writer. Like, you have to be funny and talented anyway, right?
Right.
But that's not enough.
No, it's not enough.
Exactly.
We know so
See?
Many talented people who didn't put in the effort.
See?
I agree with Noam insofar as I think these tips are helpful, and they can take you a little further, and perhaps they can make you a competent comic.
Okay.
But to make you a... Let me just finish my thought. They can make you a competent comic, but I don't think they can make you Gary Goldman.
Well, music is a good analogy. Like, you're a guitar teacher. You can teach people tips, significant tips about music. But you know who takes them and runs with it? The people with talent.
Okay.
You know, they're like, it's like an insight and an epiphany to them, and then they internalize it immediately. But it does. But you can't make a good guitar player by giving a bunch of tips. You can't.
Right. But I remember seeing an interview with Steve Martin on the BBC that really stuck with me. He said, because people always refer to him as a genius, and he's touched and all this, and he says, I'm not a genius. If I have any genius, it's my obsession. I'm obsessed with these things, and I think obsession can translate into success and accomplishments.
Well, I do agree. I think, trial and error.
Yeah.
Like, they talked about, just get the music, I just saw an article, but it was right. Like, they're going back and seeing all these Beatles demos. And, like, the Paul McCartney demos, like, the first demo of, like, a Hey Jude, it's Hey Jude exactly.
Really?
Back to the na-na-na-na-na-na, the whole thing. But the John Lennon demos are all over the place. There's different sections. The writer described John Lennon as more of a trial-and-error composer.
Yeah.
And I said, you know, that does really seem right, but it's a legit creative process.
Yes.
You know, not everybody operates the same way.
Heuristic, right? Isn't that the word?
H-U-R-I-S.
Yeah.
Let me read one of these, and I want to ask Gary how he applies it in his own act. You say, if you want to make a joke denser.
Yeah.
And deeper.
Yes.
Do some research on the topic.
Right.
Would you like me to read this in my own voice, or would is there a particular voice you prefer?
In Gary Goldman's voice.
I don't do it as Tracy Morgan. You want to make a joke denser.
Nah, that's terrible.
You want...
And deeper. You got to do some research. You will find inside a perspective that you hadn't thought of. Spend an hour or two to add a minute to a good joke. That's a bargain.
Very good, Dan.
Thank you.
You didn't see the physical part of that. It was great.
So I'll just summarize. You talk about doing research to make a joke.
Right.
Can you give us an example from your own
act?
Yes,
I can give
you
an example from Okay, so I started one night downstairs at the Cellar, which is a great lab, and I had this thing about Chris Pine being in Wonder Woman and in
Star Trek
in the same year. And then the line was just basically and yet you walk by a person on every street corner, and they don't have shoes. It was that simple, and it would get a good laugh occasionally. And then I was like, "This is not that. It's not worth trying out over again." I just read the Wikipedia page for Chris Pine, and it said that he was agnostic, And then I wrote like 5 or 6 minutes on me believing in God with very little.
Oh, that's great.
Especially at the time. And him not believing in God with all these gifts and how infuriating it was.
And yet God rewarded him.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Well, that's a lot like our dear friend Mr. Noam Dorman, who mocks the very notion of God. and yet he cannot help but succeeding here at the Comedy Cellar.
Right, but I think I may be on the Pascal Wager side of my religiosity, in that I feel like I have nothing to lose by believing in God. And
yes,
and
but you know, I read the book by, what's his name, that famous atheist, Richard Dawkins?
Oh, yeah, I read that, too.
Pascal's Wager, for those who don't know
the
what
God
that is.
God delusion?
The God delusion, yeah.
Yeah.
So Pascal's Wager means you might as well believe in God because you have nothing to lose by believing God.
Right.
Richard Dawkins posited the notion that what if there's a God that wants you to think for yourself?
Right.
And then you're punished because you just believed without logic and evidence, and you'll get to heaven and say, I'd love to let you in, but actually, I'm a God that wanted you all to think for yourselves, and there was no evidence to believe in me.
Right.
So down you go.
Yeah.
So that's sort of Pascal's wager in verse.
Right. There's another French philosopher who I...
Well, that's what Dawkins... I thought it was an interesting...
No, I think it's just...
I admire.
The pig or vermin, you have to call the herd. Like, why are you letting the pigs... Well, you have to eat the pigs, you idiot. Go ahead.
Albert Camus, who said, I'd rather go through life believing in God and die to find out there isn't, then go through life not believing in God and die and find out there is. So that's another.
But of course, one can say they believe in God, but to really believe in God is not something you can choose, I don't think. I mean, I've struggled. Obviously, I'd want to believe in God.
I go in and out, or I've gone in and out over my life. But there's also a very good chance that we're all in a computer simulation. I keep coming back to that.
There's not a good chance of that, Gary.
I heard one philosopher say there's only a 1 in a billion chance that we're not.
So, then it must be true.
I'll give you a...
How did he calculate those odds?
Well, my proof is frame stores.
Frame stores. Go ahead.
Yes. Okay. So...
This is amazing, by the way.
You never go in them until you go in them, because we don't frame that much. But when you do go in them... They're so ridiculously overpriced that you say, well, I'm never coming in here again. And I think it points to the laziness of the coder who puts a frame store in every strip mall because he doesn't want to put anything creative in there.
It's a generic loop of...
Yes. Like on when you're watching a Flintstones episode, animation was so expensive, Fred would run by the same painting of a dinosaur... over and over again because they didn't want to pay animators to do the background. And so I think frame stores are that painting of this computer simulation we're in. And then the people who work in the frame store, who they had to design and everything, they just go back to working at a place where it's actually affordable and good value, which a Starbucks or a...
So let me ask you a question. If we are in a computer simulation...
Yes.
What are the odds that the simulator made all the races equal?
Oh,
I mean, like, if you want to go there, like, really? Well, if this is somebody's idea of fun, like a simulation, why would they have any thought about, like, egalitarian and all people should be created equal and stereotypes won't be true? Maybe it's all true, but it's all part of the simulation, and we're fighting it.
Although I read a Tablet article saying that the Jewish nose was a myth. I don't know if you
I didn't write that one.
Okay.
Well, that was in the fiction. I didn't know they did fiction.
You know what? I'm beginning to believe this simulation. Looking at the schnozzles at this table.
Gary, I wanted to. Can I ask one of the tips I questioned you on, but ever so slightly, and only to provoke discussion.
But let me just tell you that my self-esteem, my ego is so fragile that if you question my tips, I
and it wasn't even questioning. I wouldn't even qualify it as questioning your tip.
I fly into a rage. How dare you?
I appreciate that, and I deleted the tweet that I tweeted back. And again, I was only trying to deepen the discussion.
Sure, of course.
But you had tipped about not. I believe it was based on a famous writer. Was it Orwell or Fitzgerald or
Orwell's idioms and metaphors?
Yes. Well,
what is that?
I flew into a rage. That tip.
Never use an idiom or figure of speech that you've seen in print. That was Orwell's first rule for effective writing.
Give me an example. Oh, can you think of an example?
Well, I'm trying to think like leading a horse to water or something like that. Like within your act, you should try to be more creative than something you've read before.
And original, you also say.
Yeah. So finish your thought. But we've talked about this. Actually,
I countered Well, I was thinking more along the lines of don't use obvious metaphors that you've seen before, but certain figures of speech we use, they're part of the English language. They're fixed expressions like, it was the last straw.
Right.
That I see is okay, because if you said...
Sure.
No, in French, by the way, they say it was the drop of water that made the vase overflow. Instead of the last, the straw that broke the camel's back.
Terrific. How do you say that in French? Say it in
French. C'est le goutteau qui a fait déborder le vase.
I love it.
It's too long.
Sounds better in
French. Sounds better in French. Goodfellas. Yeah.
But if we said in English, if I said to you, or if I said on stage, man, you know, my old lady was nagging me, and that was just the fucking last drop of water that made the vase overflow.
But do you see that you proved my point there?
Yeah, that was good.
This is so funny. This is so original. And you got it because you didn't use a layup of a figure of speech.
I used another layup, a figure of speech in another country.
But nobody knows that.
You went into an original idea, and I guess that's the underlying truth of or my point of that tweet is that it's use it, but you're not gaining anything and you're not adding anything.
But wouldn't the audience be like, what the fuck is he talking about?
No, I understand that. And by the way,
it was so interesting.
The first time somebody said straw that broke the camel's back,
oh,
that packed a wallop.
But that was Orwell's point, that they've lost all impact.
Yeah. So we've talked about this because during this whole Ilhan Omar thing, I didn't want to use the word tropes. Like, you just say like trope. I'm like,
trope, yeah. When did trope become so commonplace?
It's like, we used to say, I have this allergy to people, and there's a lot of like conflate is a word you hear all the time. Like, you just people or let's unpack this. Like, there's all, and I'm like, anytime
or
you start
gaslighting,
and it's somewhat is not fair because it's a perfectly good word or the concept may be accurate, but you just start becoming generic when you start using the same word.
Be clever,
make an impact. Because you know what, Gary? Everything is entertainment. Whether you're writing a dry scholarly essay or on TV or have guests to dinner.
Yes.
It's entertainment, and part of entertainment is not being fucking predictable.
Absolutely.
Everything in life. You gotta flair.
And also, one of your tips is the sounds of words. So
they matter, yeah.
Yeah, and so one of them is the word Buick is funnier than Nissan, which is really true, and I think, again, makes you think about each... The economy of your word
this
choice.
Is where talent, I think, comes in, because I think... Certain people can hear, they just hear it in their head, a funnier rhythm. I mean, there's certain rules, like the K sound, it's been said, is funny or whatever. And maybe that's a rule that anyone can follow. But I think in a more general sense, certain people can hear that rhythm and hear, just know what's funny intrinsically.
Right.
And other people just ain't never going to get it.
But, I on en vogue. But I think that... I can do it on the fly now, and I can do it on stage because I've done it so many thousands of times. But initially, I had to do these things the way I'm saying to do them in the tips. Well, so that I can choose a word. But also, sometimes actually do trial and error, the heuristic approach, and try different words and syllables and things like that. And when you were talking about Lennon and McCartney, it reminded me of the sort of the two schools that I operate from. There's the Jerry Seinfeld school, who writes everything down and performs. He says an imitation of his best performance of that joke. And then there was Gary Shandling, who would meddle with the pacing and the order and the delivery and the timing and the pitch and all these things. And I think somewhere in the middle is you're going to get your best.
You know what I've suspected about that, because, you know, having some experience with some of these things, when I heard Seinfeld say that, I said, you know why you think that? Because emotionally, you have very little variance day to day.
Interesting.
You know what I mean? Yeah, because, you know, when you're in a different mood, a different way will come out funnier because you're feeling it differently.
Yes, absolutely.
And certain people are like volatile that way. And like, you know, same thing with like a song. Like
a song, exactly.
You're just like,
with a song.
I'm feeling this.
Yes.
Feeling this way, so I'll play this way. But if I'm not feeling this way and I try to play it that way tomorrow, the audience is not going to accept it. But Seinfeld is so even keeled.
Yeah.
All he need do is imitate his best show. I think there's something to that.
Absolutely.
One tip I would give, if I was giving tips, and I'm certainly not involved in that space, that's another word people use nowadays, in the space. you know, they say in the space, in the tech space.
That's not my wheelhouse, but go ahead.
Yes, wheelhouse. I would say any joke written whilst you're half asleep ain't going to work.
Wow.
Now, that's your you find that out
it,
anyway.
You can still get your wife pregnant that way, by the way. Just for a second.
Have you ever, like, sometimes I'm half asleep and I come up with something.
Oh, my gosh.
And it happens all the time. And then and it even seems okay once I'm fully awake. But then it never, and not only doesn't it work, it bombs catastrophically.
Wow.
That said, sometimes tweets written half asleep do work.
That's interesting. How many
times, been my experience.
The question is, how many times have you written something or come up with something half asleep and then tried it out?
Often.
Ten times? 10 times? Yeah. I don't know if that's a big enough sample.
I think it's a reasonable sample, especially because
12 is a significant sample.
When we judge a joke as comedians, we not only judge, we do a joke, and if it doesn't work, we might do it again. And if it doesn't work, we might try a third and last time, and usually by then we'll scrap it. But not only do we, but if it doesn't work in such spectacular fashion.
Right.
If it, I'm not talking about not working. I'm talking about stares, like, what is this guy, what is he saying? I'm talking about a cacophonous not working. That I will, that you don't need to do 3 times. 2 cacophonous is more than enough. Two dead silences is more than enough, I think, to throw a joke away. I mean, in other words, we judge a joke not just by does it work, but how much does it work?
Do you have any jokes that you dust off every once in a while because you believe in it so much you can't believe it doesn't work? And then I remember John Mendoza having one of the best jokes I ever heard. He said that he was a shepherd who was fired for falling asleep during inventory. And he said he could never get that to work, and it was one of the funniest things I've ever heard in my life.
There are topics that I've been working on, sometimes for years, and sometimes I finally get them right.
Okay.
Like, one topic I was working on for years is the idea of sending text to the wrong person.
Right.
And I had various variations of that joke, and none of them worked very well, until I finally came up with the Cousin Sheila angle.
Yes!
Wherein I send a text saying,
wherein?
to my Cousin Sheila saying, I'm horny, come over, and then I realized I'd sent it to my Cousin Sheila instead of the girl that I'm dating, and then I apologized to my Cousin Sheila. I said, I'm sorry you came all the way over here. but that took me probably about 2 years of playing with that concept to get right.
See, but if coming out of the gate it had gotten nothing, you probably wouldn't have gone back.
If it had gotten nothing, I would have dismissed the particular joke, but not the concept.
Right.
The concept might still be valid.
I think that's a good
lesson.
Even
if the joke itself is not
the
valid.
Concept, the premise.
I do want to talk about...
Wait, I want to say one thing, because both of the things that you just said are 2 tips that I read in the past 2 days, one of which is that proximity is better.
Yes.
So
what does that mean?
Well, go ahead. What does that mean?
Well, Perry L is an up-and-coming comic, by the way. That's what.
I didn't realize that. I'm sorry.
Okay.
Or maybe I forgot it, and because my memory is not the best. But so
and also a writer.
Proximity is. I find that if I tell a story that happened to a friend of mine from high school, it's not as funny as if I say this thing happened to my brother, or my father,
or my aunt Sheila.
Yeah. Or cousin Sheila.
Sheila joke, it had to be Cousin Sheila, because
But that's another tip, which is specific.
That's right.
If you had said my cousin, not as funny as my cousin Sheila.
That's true.
Yeah.
I think you're right there.
Is there a cousin Sheila?
No, there is not. And nor is there a cousin based on cousin Sheila. In other words, I've never...
But that's brilliant.
Yeah.
Well, I appreciate it. I don't know if brilliant
that's
is...
That's why wife jokes are funny. Complain about your wife's cooking. You don't complain about your friend's cooking.
Right, yeah. Or a restaurant.
Do you ever
cooking,
have jokes that contradict themselves so they have to be separated by, say, 20 minutes?
No, I try to eliminate that because it drives me insane.
But if you yeah, like, in other words,
example,
if you have a joke that says, well, in high school I never got laid, and it's a joke and it works or whatever, and then you have another joke about some chick you banged in high school.
Oh, yeah, you can't do that.
Well, but if you separate it by a sufficient length of time, you
then
might...
they don't notice they're being lied to?
Well, a sufficient length of time divided by the attention that they pay to Dan.
Yeah, I don't know.
I think if you have 2 great jokes and I don't have any jokes that contradict each other that brutally.
Right.
But
right.
I do have jokes that are better, and I should have prepared a couple of an example of this.
Okay.
But the point is some jokes need to be separated because they're slightly contradictory or they...
Right. Can I have 2 political points of view sometimes?
What are you going to like? Come out as like a Republican and a liberal? And
no, it wouldn't be that drastic, but it might be.
Well, I think your example is actually pretty good because you could have both those.
Yeah, you could have both those jokes. Yeah. You know, high school I never got laid, and then this chick I banged in high school, and I would, and if they're both great jokes, beautifully written jokes, and they can be separated
now, Louis
sufficiently.
Louis would put them right back to back, and then that would be the joke too.
Yeah, that's interesting.
Well, that could be an
it would also be interesting to point out, although that's there's postmodern where you acknowledge these are jokes, but then there's post-postmodern which says, yeah, people have done that, so it's not so modern.
Can we talk about, bringing this more specifically to the Comedy Cellar, about your war against the fat black pussycat? just to give the listeners some background, here at the Comedy Cellar, because... There's so many people coming to this club. Noam had to open up other rooms. So we opened up a room around the corner called the Village Underground.
Yes, which is a miracle.
It's a beautiful room, wonderful room.
It's a masterpiece.
Giving us many laughs and tears.
A lot of tweaking went into the Village Underground's arrival.
Yeah.
But as a space and venue equal to what we have downstairs, which is miraculous. Because he caught lightning in a bottle twice.
Well, I read, there's tips. Bud Friedman tips Comedy Club. He tweets.
So
what I'm trying to say.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. Yeah.
Then he opened up a third room upstairs and the lounge area of the Fat Black Pussycat bar that he also owns. And it's about an 80-seat lounge area with couches.
Like 60 seats.
60 seats, couches, comfortable chairs.
Do you
nice
know
place
what?
To take a nap.
Do you know what it's
and
sometimes referred to in the underground?
No.
The slapdash cash grab.
Oh, that's not what it is. That was
I know.
That's what
I'm just joking.
Because Robert Kelly actually was the one who really pushed me to open that room. I wasn't.
It has enormous potential.
But people like Colin Quinn use it all the time. You know,
sure.
Amy Schumer wanted to shoot her. Special there.
Sure, but the people who come to see Amy Schumer sit up at attention and
That's
don't
right.
get lulled into the cushions of the yeah. of the sofa.
The thing about that room is you almost never get the same crowd response that you get to the other two rooms. Sometimes you get very little at all, and sometimes it's pretty good, but on average it's significantly less.
What I was just talking to Liz about was putting a drop ceiling there, because part of that is just the high ceiling.
Right.
And laughter is contagious in a sense that if the laughs are louder, people laugh more. It's kind of a positive feedback loop. So we may tweak that.
Do
as
you
well.
Attribute that? A lot of people have just attributed it to comfortable chairs and couches. People are just tired and they're so comfy they fall asleep.
I don't think that's what it is. I think it's the acoustics more.
Do you think it's that the people who are in that room by definition don't really have their shit together, because if they did, they would have made reservations at one of the original rooms?
No, we get people like that room.
Really?
Like, audience people like that room. Yeah.
Wow. They like balancing fries and things
just
on their laps.
They like the vibe. They like the kind of the alternative. Like,
yeah, there's also no tables, right? So the food is eaten on your lap, I guess?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah.
They like it. We get compliments about it.
But Gary's gone so far as to say he doesn't want to work there anymore.
Yeah. Yeah. I've gone that far.
No, he actually
but
didn't,
I occasionally
no, he didn't
pop
go
in
that
occasionally.
Far. He did not go that far.
No, he didn't.
He went as far as to complain about the room, and I told him he didn't have to work there.
Right.
He actually never said that.
Yes. Okay. Yeah. That's the clarification. That's true.
I worked there, but only because I don't have the temerity to say I don't want to work there, and also because if I said no, I won't work there, then I'd rather work there than not at all.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And were I, you know, in a position to make demands, that might be a demand that I would make.
Why? Because you think that people are just slung back in those seats?
Well, I don't know the reason, as we've said. I just know that the response there is hit or miss.
Yeah. Hit slash miss.
It's hit slash miss.
Yeah.
And having said that, I've seen people kill there.
Yeah.
And by the way, so for instance, like Will does new joke night down there.
Yes.
And I think it works better in that room than it might work
in
the underground.
That's interesting. Yes.
It's very informal.
I've heard that. Yes. Yeah. Yes. And Will is terrific at running that.
He's great.
Yeah.
But he uses the vibe of the room becomes the vibe of the show.
Yeah.
And
oh, that's a good point. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, we'll see if the drop ceilings right. Have any impact.
But I had suggested a couple of tweaks.
What tweaks would you think might be workable?
Well, I wanted a little helpful. More space between the front row and the stage so that people don't rest their feet on my stage, right? Because I think they disrespect me if they think, oh, look at me. And it's from Blazing Saddles.
Yeah, yeah. It's even before that. It's an old joke.
Yeah, it's an old joke. And then...
Are you in show business? Get your feet off the stage.
Yeah. And then maybe it could be as simple as putting a board underneath the cushions so that they're a little less comfortable in the sofas.
Thumbtacks.
Yes.
No, you know, to be honest, when you talk this way, I realize that I'm getting a little complacent because, you know, 25 years ago, I would have taken your... what you said as a clarion call to like really get on it, which I did on the underground, and I've been a little slow, but I'm gonna commit myself.
I mean, you are a very busy man with a lot of irons and a number of different fires.
He is busy. That being said, we've all seen him spend hours here drinking Frangelico and just debating with his friends.
Right, but there was a time when he would count the blueberries in the muffins.
Yeah, but he was right for counting the blueberries in the muffins.
Listen, absolutely.
I love to debate with my friends. This is like I told you, you know, the song "Filler on the Roof."
Yes.
If I were a rich man.
If I were a rich man, I think about that all the time. When I was on vacation, I read 9 hours a day, and I was in heaven.
But the point is how Noam,
do you know
how
the verse
busy
I'm talking
Noam
about?
Is an open question. I know the verse about the greatest gift would be to
sing it.
Study.
Sing it.
I'm not going to sing it for you, but.
If I were rich, I'd have the time that I lack to sit in a synagogue and maybe have a seat at the Eastern Wall. I would discuss the holy books with a learned man 7 hours every day. But this is the part, Dan. This is the whole point of the song. That would be the sweetest thing of all.
Wow. I've got the chills.
And Noam, who is a rich man,
But let me be clear. So the whole point of this story, this song, which is lost on everybody, is that the whole thing is like, if I were rich, I'd have this. One staircase going to the... But actually, at the end, the greatest thing about being rich...
Yeah.
Be able to sit around and shoot and debate.
Yep.
That would be it.
And sink himself further into his faith.
Well, the faith, and you know, in Judaism, it's the faith and the arguing and, you know, it's that whole thing.
Once again,
so
Noam,
that's the sweetest pleasure of all.
Once again, Noam rushing to the defense of the Jewish people.
No, I'm defending myself because you kind of poo-pooed, like
I'm not
debating.
It.
I'm like, yeah,
no,
I love
not
that.
At all.
That's my happiest thing.
No, I was questioning how busy you are because
it's the kids. I don't like to take time away from the kids.
But as far as being busy at work, I don't know how busy he is.
I'm busy.
That's another issue. But do you want to talk about Gary's veganism?
Okay, yeah, Gary.
Gary's recently gone vegan.
Are you deep into this vegan stuff?
Well, I started January 1st, 2018. That was my resolution before the tips last year. And then, so I've continued over a year.
Now, are you heavy into the vegan philosophy of it? Like, because... There's an answer for everything when you talk to a vegan.
No.
Like, why won't you eat an unfertilized egg that just drops out of a chicken? You know, she can't even help it.
Yeah, if I knew for sure that the source was a chicken who seemed to be living in...
If it was your pet
relative
chicken,
comfort.
I would eat it.
Okay,
yeah.
so that's different because I have a vegan friend who said he would not eat it.
Oh, really?
I said, you won't eat your own pet chicken egg? And he had some reason, which I don't think he made up. I think this, you know, like he went to the talking points of veganism.
Interesting.
But then I
haven't gone deep enough.
So I let him out and say, what if it was a free range? What if you owned the farm? No, because farming, okay, what if it was a pet chicken and you just found the egg?
Yeah.
He said, I wouldn't eat it. I'm like, okay, what about a 6-month abortion? And he's like, woman's right to choose.
Right.
And I'm like, oh, really?
Yeah.
So you won't eat an unfertilized egg, but you're okay with abortion's not even a tough
one. But your reasons for veganism are mainly not health, but moral or both?
Both. Yeah, I read an essay by Michael Pollan in which I can't remember the philosopher or the philosophy, which talked about the fact that in our society, we give equal rights to people who aren't as smart as us, and if you take that a little bit further, then animals are just beings that are really not as smart as us, and so we should give them the same.
Pigs are as smart as 3-year-old children.
They are not. Where do you get these factoids from?
Fox News.
Good answer.
See?
Well, then maybe it's true.
I cannot.
Pigs are not as smart as 3-year-old children. That's the most ridiculous thing I've ever heard. 3-year-old children can do puzzles.
I think that
the pigs in this Fox News study actually proved collusion.
I think that the argument for veganism, or at least for vegetarianism, is pretty unimpeachable. I just can't do it.
Right. Sure. No, I understand that. I eased into it partially with you. We used to frequent vegan restaurant, and I will say that people have said that it makes a significant difference if you only eat one vegan meal a week.
So here's a question. So first of all, I'm actually quite sympathetic. I don't know about veganism, but I'm sympathetic to the idea of being concerned about the humanitarian issue
of animals. Well, the meat industry in America is appalling beyond measure. I'm a vegetarian. I'm not a vegan. But the industry as it works in this country is horrific.
Right. I agree with you.
And yet it's never been better.
Yeah. The meat.
Meat industry has never been less corrupt and...
So my question is this, and I see an analogy here. So, you know, a lot of these left-wing people in the news lately, like Ocasio-Cortez, they get called out for driving SUVs like I had a guy I met the other day. He's a real labor agitator. I'm like, well, do you have an iPhone? He's talking about, you know, in Amazon, they're peeing in bottles. I'm like, well, do you have an iPhone? He's like, yeah. I said, well, you know,
they're,
and he's like, well, but, and the argument is like, well, we can't shut down everything, you know, you can't expect me to stop driving. I say, well, vegetarians who believe that it's, you know, they're concerned about the humanitarian treatment of animals, they do stop eating meat. You don't need to have an iPhone.
Right.
Like my Pixel phone, I was actually concerned, is made in South Korea. So why not have, like, it's just so you wonder sometimes about these things. How much of it is, how much of it is trendy? How much of it is thought through?
Yeah,
and things like that. I think that if you're concerned about animals, yeah, you should stop eating meat. I get that. And if you're concerned about global warming, yeah, you should probably start taking the subway everywhere and in every aspect of that you can control.
Yeah.
Minimize your carbon footprint, just like a vegetarian will. I'm sure if you were starving, you'd eat meat. You know, if you have to, you have to.
Yeah.
But wherever you can, you do it. And you know you're not going to bring down the meat industry.
Right.
But it's a principle.
But it's all best effort. So you can have an iPhone, but there could be other things that you could do. You could support a labor movement or...
No. If you were concerned about labor and you actually have the nerve to go on TV and talk about it, you should not have an iPhone, knowing that they're committing suicide.
Wow.
I lose all respect for you. Like, you don't even mean this a little bit. The iPhone is just too good.
Right.
Come on now.
Yeah.
But you want everyone else to, you know.
Well, John Stossel, who was on the show not that long ago, said that whatever we do for global warming, it doesn't make a difference. Like, you could do every single American, I'm paraphrasing, this might not be right.
America could shut down, and it would not change the trajectory of global warming. This is correct. I've researched this.
It sounds like such an insane thing to say.
Because China and India... they have billions of people,
but it wouldn't make things.
If it wouldn't make a difference,
worse.
If it wouldn't make a difference, there's a reason. That's rational, not to do it.
Yes,
but not eating a cow is making a big difference
to that cow. Yeah.
So whatever little you do as a vegan or vegetarian, you are making some difference.
In order to combat global warming, we're going to have to figure out some way to reverse it.
I agree with that.
Yeah. So, but saying there's nothing we can do, throwing up our hands, I don't think is going to lead to people studying to reverse it.
So, to the choir.
But I haven't taken anything John Stossel said seriously since he got beat up by that wrestler in 2020 a long time ago.
By the way, your memory is very good. we're fundamentally not serious about global warming because we do actually have a solution to global warming right now, which is nuclear energy.
Yes. Yes. And
Come on now.
Because environmentalists are against nuclear energy, and it is the answer.
They're not serious.
Yes, and I'm also they're brainwashed, I think.
I don't know what the hell they're thinking.
The other side of that, there was something else that I was thinking of recently. Oh, GMO. I have no problem eating anything GMO. I don't care
like
about
nectarine.
That. That is not dangerous.
Yeah, it's not dangerous, no.
Yeah.
They're nuts. But
it's foolish and anti-science.
If you think civilization is going to end in 12 years, and we don't have...
Or 100 or whatever.
Well, AOC's been saying 12 years, or, you know, civilization...
I don't think you said it's going to end.
That we will she didn't say it was going to end, but she 12 years was the number. We're gonna have irreparable, like the shit's gonna hit the fan in 12 years, kind of. Then, and you don't have the technology today to adjust to this, but we do have nuclear. So you build nuclear now, and then as soon as you can leave it behind, you leave it behind.
Right.
And yes, it might be a nuclear accident.
Yes.
And maybe 100 people
so
will die. Maybe
unlikely,
1,000,
though.
Well, maybe 1,000 people will die.
Yeah.
It's nothing. You can't even put that on the other side of equation with civilization ending.
I spend so much time putting things on the other sides of equations. I don't know if you do.
Of course.
But I just, because the numbers we're dealing with, that's why I've been reading this excellent book that I'm sure people have debunked or whatever as they do anything, but I find Steven Pinker very, very interesting. He wrote a book called Enlightenment Now, which is sort of an update of the better angels of our nature. Anyhow, he talks about a lot of the things we're talking about. Yes, there
are. Does he talk about nuclear?
Yes, he's in favor of nuclear energy as an answer to global warming. But he says that yes, some terrible things happen. A nuclear accident did happen, but it's an anecdote, not a trend. And an anecdote doesn't make a trend, and a trend doesn't make an epidemic. And
it's insanity, Gary.
Yes, it is insanity.
I mean, 70,000 people died. I learned this yesterday. 70,000 people died of opioids this year.
Yes.
I mean, there's death everywhere.
A car accident is much more likely to kill you than any of the things that we're going crazy trying to prevent.
That's right.
Yes.
So then somebody from my political persuasion
exponentially
asks, okay, so what's going on there? Are they unserious about global warming, or are they not smart enough to do this simple arithmetic? Like, how could somebody who makes this such an important issue to themselves, if I had AOC here, what would she? What would her reason be against nuclear?
Is she anti-nuclear?
Yeah.
Or is she not pronounced an opinion?
It's not a part. The Green New Deal should be.
Yeah.
Tomorrow we build all the nuclear plants we can, and with the time that
or
buys
use
us,
some of the ones we already have.
Use the ones we have. Build all that we can, and with the time that buys us, we devote all our attention to trying to find a permanent solution to this. If that's the only rational Green New Deal there is. First step, build all the nuclear power plants.
How much would it help if I went back to my non-electric toothbrush? Anyhow.
Minister. With your gingivitis?
Oh,
actually,
geez,
I have very good teeth. No,
gums.
I'm taking,
death comes in
I
through
have
the
very
gums.
Good
that's really good to know.
Teeth, and my gums are pretty good.
Yeah.
My teeth are A+. My gums are, say, B+.
The gums are all that matters.
Yeah, gums could lead to serious heart disease.
You can hold on to the worst teeth with good gums.
Be that as it may, your point about my gums was something wrong.
You know, a lot of Ashkenazi Jews have bad gums.
Well, I didn't know that, but I'm the exception to that particular rule. I'm not the exception to the big nose rule or the annoying rule.
So let me ask a question. Dan, do you think there's truth to any of the Jewish stereotypes?
Well, certainly there's truth to physical stereotypes. Obviously, you put Gary and Rutger Hauer side by side and say, which one is Dutch? I'm likely to guess Rutger Hauer. But
that's a great, oh my gosh. And Rutger Hauer. See, that's a brilliant joke.
Well, I don't know if it's a joke, but it's whatever it is. I would say the same thing about putting Rutger next to
No day. Proximity.
By the way, Rutger Hauer.
No.
But specificity.
And Rutger Hauer is a very funny expression.
Yeah.
But as far as other stereotypes are concerned, Jews and money. Well, statistically, Jews have more money. So I guess
Are Jews more concerned with money, Dan?
They might be. I don't know about that for sure.
Well, I've heard several people say that the Jamaicans are the Jews of the Caribbean.
Oy.
And that.
What does that mean?
That it's not. No, that the answer is
why,
no.
Why are you be dropping that penny, man?
The answer is no?
The answer is no, that Jews are not more concerned with money. That there are many. And then also that the Chinese are the yellow Jews. A Chinese person told me that.
Interesting. I have a theory, and it could probably be picked apart, but that it's I hate to refer to it as cheapness, but it comes from being poor and struggling.
Well, you could say
and
that it comes from
the fact
Holocaust.
That you could that you could lose everything in a moment, but not even from the Holocaust. They've been chased out of every country we've ever been in, except America.
So far,
my experience is not that Jews are.
God bless, it's not so far.
Jews are cheap. But there is, and Colin Quinn talked about this a little bit, there is a lack of...
Can we get a Gentile in here to maybe speak?
There's a lack of shame sometimes. Like, I had dinner with somebody recently. I just met
Jim Norton.
I'm talking, Dan.
I'm sorry.
I had dinner with this guy for the first time. He owned a restaurant. I just met him, and he's like, I was like, how you doing? He goes, oh, well, you know, it's a little bit slow tonight. You know, the numbers are going to... And he's like, it immediately starts spouting out, like, financial numbers. I'm like, whoa, you know?
Yeah.
And
it's tacky.
It was a certain tacky thing that somehow I imagine... It was like a cultural thing. I don't know. I don't know.
Right.
Clearly, we recognize talking to other Jews.
Yeah. We find ourselves revolting.
But they're not bad tippers. They're not ungenerous.
No.
I don't find cheapness is not the actual. Is not the exact. It's not a perfect fit.
Right.
Do you feel that Jews are more likely to, say, go into fields that are highly remunerative?
No, I don't feel that.
Whereas a smart Gentile might, say, become an archaeologist or a zoologist or something, would a Jew more likely to become a bond trader?
I don't know. A lot of Jews go into creative fields and
well,
and
speaking as a Jew in a creative field, I honest to God, I thought I was going to make money. as crazy as that sounds. One stereotype that is absolutely true is Jewish clickiness. Witness, for example, this podcast.
Wow.
Well, Jews are into everything. And, you know, Barry Weiss talked about anti-Semitism. She said, you know, the Jews are the capitalists and the Jews are the communism, blah, blah, blah. And she was making the point that it's contradictory. I'm like, you know what? But they are the capitalists and they are the communists. Like, if you look at the history of the Russian Revolution, it was like half of them were Jews.
Oh,
and
no,
that's I don't know where you read that statistic. There were certainly prominent Jews in the movement, but not half of them.
There was a famous train ride where Lenin and Trotsky and apparently half the people on that train.
Well,
ride.
That train, yes.
But doesn't Israel?
That was the only train that ran.
But this was
all the other trains ran on Shabbat.
If it's not half, this was a tiny percentage of Russia. And Jews were heavily.
Jews are very loud, so you have a lot of Jews. That a lot of Jews that are anti-Trump, and you have a lot of Jews in Trump's corner.
By
and they're
the way,
both equally as abrasive.
Karl Marx was Jewish too. But and they are the capitalists, and they just seem to be involved in like whatever they decide to get involved in.
Yeah.
They make themselves known in some way, which is
I have not met a Jewish zoologist, and I think that Jews do not also generally
How
go
many
into.
How zoologists have you
I've
met?
I've never met a zoologist.
I've met a
and
Jew.
And I know a number of Jewish veterinarians.
But I don't know any Jews that have gone into like very dangerous fields. Like Jews are not into doing shit that's like dangerous.
Well, except in the Israeli army, like Entebbe, driving
Israelis
it with a black
don't
person.
Count.
A
lot of Jewish Israelis don't count.
What do you mean Israelis don't
Israelis
count?
Israelis are very different than American Jews.
Well, that's quite an easy way to just prove your point by just disqualify all the people who contradict it.
I have to sign off now.
Yeah.
Where are you going to, Gary?
Littlefield in Brooklyn.
I don't know what that is, but
Five more minutes?
I really can't. I should have left five minutes ago.
We were supposed to have Sam Morrow, but he didn't show up like a Jew. he just blew us off. Is
but
there anybody?
Thank you. This was delightful.
Is there anybody around that we can bring into our discussion?
No, you know what? We're going to cut in some of Gary's comedy.
I'm a pretty good athlete. I love basketball. That's my favorite. I started off my basketball career in the very prestigious, very competitive, very cutthroat Jewish Community Center Basketball League. The JCC. The JCC was a wonderful microcosm of Jewish thinking because we're a very cautious group, the Jews, which you can understand. We've been in a couple of pickles over the years. Generally, lose everything we have every 65 years. And it's been like 67. So if your Jews are on edge, you'll have to understand. But this goes beyond caution into the realm of lunacy. The Jewish Community Center Basketball League was a league for 12 and under Jewish boys, and they installed collapsible rims on the hoops. There wasn't a kid in the league who could grab net. And yet the rims were collapsible, which is such Jewish thinking. You never know. You never know. Better safe than sorry, Gary. But you better know. You never know. Nah, sometimes you know. There are certain precedents as far as smashing backboards. In the history of the NBA, four people have smashed a backboard. Not a single one was a 10-year-old Jew. More 10-year-old Jews have played Chunk in the Goonies than have smashed a backboard playing basketball. You're probably not Chunk, but it's more likely you are than you smashed a backboard playing basketball. And I remember I told my mom about this. She says, well, Gary, maybe it's for the fathers. Did you think about that? Yes, I thought about it and I immediately dismissed it. Yes, yes. Oh yeah, it's for the fathers. It's for the only group of people less likely to smash a backboard. The 45-year-old Black Sox with Air Jordans fathers. They're not only dunking, they're dunking so ferociously that they're shattering glass backboards. Yes, yes. Dr. Barry Rosenthal got off on a break Monday night, and he filled the lane, and Avi Lieberman, attorney at law, threw him a no-look oop. Rosenthal timed it perfectly, came down like a house of fire. Shards of glass went everywhere. Dr. Mel Rabinowitz, your orthodontist, you have an appointment for a tightening on Wednesday. I'll call to confirm, because he received lacerations about his forehead and neck. He was treated and released, Baruch Hashem. But now, now, the Rabinowitzes is suing the JCC. Spalding basketball for making a defective, well, they feel they were negligent. They feel that the Spalding basketball should come with a parachute in case such a thing happens. And they're suing Dr. James Naismith's estate for inventing a basketball game that was so violent. So very, very violent, Gary. Oh, it's exhausting.
Did what about this Zimmerman character? Zimmerman, would you?
No, we need a Gentile.
He is Gentile.
Zimmerman?
Yes, it's a German name.
Zimmerman. He's not Gentile.
Yes, he is.
You're German? Does Esty know that? Does Esty know that you're German? Hey, Jim.
Jim has sat down for just a spell.
Does Esty know that
guy.
You're not Jewish? I'm sure she doesn't.
What are you guys talking about?
We're just talking about
we're
Jews,
talking about
and,
Jews
stereotypes,
and whether the stereotypes are true.
A Gentile opinion.
Sit down. We want a German's opinion.
I'll just do it for a minute.
Are you just how many generations away from Germany are you?
I'm Swiss. We're the friendly people.
Oh, you're Swiss. Good job, Dan.
What would you like to know about the...
We'd like to know if you found Jews to be a cheaper or more money-oriented than non-Jews.
Colin pointed out that Jews just talk about it more. I think they're just more honest about money. They're comfortable with it. Whereas most people have that fake humility around money, and Jews will just talk about it. No, I don't think they're any money hungrier than anybody else. I've never noticed that.
And the German point of view?
Swiss German.
I grew up in West Virginia. I never knew a single stereotype about Jewish people, basically until I got to New York.
Yeah. People two nice posters hanging up, and that was about it.
People in West Virginia don't really know much about, or have any negative things to say.
Right, let's get off Jews. Let's talk about something else. We have a few more minutes. What's on your mind these days?
They're not.
I'm going on stage.
And yeah, Zimmerman has to go. Where are you going?
5 minutes anyway.
What's that?
I said I don't know if you can stay for another.
I'm going to Village Underground in 10 minutes to do a spot.
Jim, what's your take on the Mueller and Trump and the investigation and everything?
I just don't care about it. I don't care about it. I'm sick of hearing about it. I don't think they found anything. I'm bored with everybody hating Trump. Like, I get it. He says some argumentative things. You don't have to like the guy. But
you think you might vote for him?
I don't know if I'd vote for him because I don't like where he stands on, like, certain trans issues and other stuff. Like, there's certain things he does that I don't like, but I don't hate him. Like, I'm bored with every fucking late-night show host having the exact same opinion, the exact same angle. It's like, could one of you guys mix it up a little? Like, just a little. Like, one new joke that's not... I know where this is going.
The orange, blah, 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 blah.
Yeah, I find myself just bored with all of it.
Yeah, I'm with you. Do you think they're going to, Mueller's going to find any collusion?
No.
What do you think, Joe?
Yeah, I
mean, do you follow politics?
Just a little, but I mean, it just seems like it's tracking that way, but it's just going to take all 4 years to get there, it seems like.
Tracking that way that they're not going to find
it. It seems like it's tracking that they're going to find criminal stuff on him.
Okay, but the thing is, yeah, you take a real estate guy in New York, and you know you're gonna find something that sure. And you don't even know if it's criminal. It's just like usually these. I'll tell you, as a business owner, usually where you get hung up is that some of the laws are not clear, and you ask your accountant, can I take the seduction? Can he says, well, and then you say, well, what happens if I do it? Well, they might disallow it. You might pay a penalty. You know, now, if he tells you it might be criminal, then you wouldn't do it. But the point is that usually when a guy like that gets in trouble, something like that, it's I would imagine it's something like that. It could be a criminal scheme, but we didn't investigate the president for 4 years to find, to take a, you know, an X-ray to everything he, a microscope to everything he did, you know, prior. It was to find out if he was a Russian spy.
Yeah, it's crazy.
And if he's not a Russian spy, I'm not that concerned whether he paid off his mistress, are you?
Well, exactly. I don't think it's as boring as Jim saying, because when has a U.S. president ever been questioned about possibly being a Russian spy?
Well, the question is it, yeah, it's not boring, but it's gone on for a long time.
What's that?
It's gone on for a very long time, and it's really about time that they end this.
I just think it's going to be an all 4 year thing, and then it might prevent him from being a second term president.
Yeah.
But I just think it's going to be the whole 4 years.
I don't think he's going to be a second term president.
But
anyway.
Doesn't it take a long time to investigate like criminal acts as a rule?
I've never heard of anything taking this long. No, I mean, you know, I don't know. I suppose it could be. I mean, it takes, if they were hoping, this is the thing, they were hoping that people would flip. So what they do is it takes a long time to find the evidence on these lower people, find something they did criminal, which is not related to Trump, not related to, and then sentence them, or at the last, and then hopefully, you know, right at the last minute, they'll say, okay, I'll tell you everything I know. But that takes years. But then at the end, if it turns out they don't know anything, then you're the whole thing goes up in a puff.
Do you think that he's a Russian spy?
He can't be. I told you he can't be. The reason he can't be is because, in my opinion, if Mueller had information that, for instance, Donald Trump was talking about pulling out of NATO because Putin told him to, or Donald Trump pulling out of Syria because Putin told him to, kind of doing irreparable damage to the world. And Mueller knows that this is because he has to come forward immediately. He can't say, well, I'm going to take my time. I'll tell you 2 years from now. And after Trump has, you know, totally fucked the world from the Russian point of view, done everything the Russians want, then we'll announce why he did it, even though we can't. Humpty Dumpty has already fallen apart. So
I'm looking at Zimmerman's face, and I'm saying to myself, this is not of great interest to him.
No, it is. I wish.
Sounds like a George.
You understand
Orwell
my logic?
Now,
like, he'd have to come. If Mueller had evidence that Trump was a Russian spy,
don't get very deep into this. I got the feeling Zimmerman,
it's not deep at all. It's actually a total bird's eye view. It's like, you know what? If he knew something, he'd have to tell us, because it's too dangerous to have a Russian spy as president. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah, no, I'm interested. I don't have the answers. I just seems like the people getting charged around him is going to eventually get to him, does it not? That's my only logic.
He might get to him about something. Like, yeah. Does Michael Cohen have information about something Donald Trump has done wrong? Yeah, he probably does.
Well, why do you not have any accent to speak of?
He does.
I don't hear it.
And I'm still stuck on the fact that his last name is Zimmerman and he's not Jewish.
That's a very, very common. Well, if you might leave the borough of Brooklyn once in a while, you might know that.
Zimmerman means carpenter in German.
My last name is German, Ashenbrand. It means burnt ashes.
Oh, right.
But
on.
I am Jewish.
Oh, oh my God, the jokes.
But the Zimmerman telegram, remember in World War I, the Zimmerman telegram? That was some German that tried to get Mexico to fight the United States in the First World War. It was a German attaché named Zimmerman.
There you go.
But Zimmerman is a very popular Jewish
name
also.
Yes, because we had lived there for a certain period of time.
What does burnt ashes mean?
I think it was like a Holocaust joke.
No, I'm saying, but ashes are burnt. I mean, ashes are a product of burning. Do they actually take ashes?
Zimmy has to go. Zimmy, where are you going? You're going to the underground?
I got the Village Underground.
What are your thoughts on the Fat Black Pussycat? Yeah, the room, the Fat Black Pussycat. Because Gary is not a fan, but
oh, I love it. Gary's the only one I've heard who's not a fan. It's just not as hot as the two other rooms, but it's still a great room.
Zimmerman, you got to remember, it's from West Virginia. And compared to the rooms there, sure, it's good.
The Fat Black Pussycat's a great room. I mean, I don't understand. It's like the McDougal's awesome. Village Underground's awesome.
Maybe we're just spoiled.
Yeah, we're just spoiled.
We're just spoiled. And no, you know, I mean, it's like if your shower pressure is, you're used to it a certain level, then even mediocre becomes intolerable.
That's a very good point, Dan.
You know, so I'm used to explosions, and I'm getting, you know, a lighter pressure over at the Fat Black Pussycat. I'm mixing my metaphors, but you get the idea.
You got to earn the joke more there, I would say.
All right, you're putting a positive spin on it. You're saying it's more of a challenge.
Yeah, I mean, but the other two rooms are hot crowds, right?
That's the point. The point so is you're getting.
We want all three to be perfect.
Hot, baby.
Perfect hot rooms.
All right, we are at
I guess we're out of time. Normally we try to give the people a little extra time. By the way, can we give out our email?
Podcast@comedyseller.com.
Podcast@comedyseller.com. We want your feedback. How well the hell else are we supposed to know what you don't like and what you like?
And you can find Dan on Instagram also, which is a good thing.
Yes, I don't post very often.
We didn't talk about the Howard Stern Wendy Williams thing.
Well, we don't have time. We do have time, but I don't have the energy.
Okay.
Podcast@comedyseller.com. Please give us your feedback. Let us help you. Help us help you.
What kind of questions do you want to hear from them?
I want to hear what they like, where they'd like this podcast to go. This is the nation's leading trans genre podcast.
That's right.
We are a little bit of everything. We're politics.
A little bit of everything. It's politics, pop culture, and comedy.
And Jewy stuff.
And Jewy.
And I think we're too Jewy, but Noam feels that I'm being self-hating.
No, we probably are. It's just like, lately there's been a lot of Jewy stuff in the news. That's why.
I don't think the show is too Jewy. I just think that we're Jewy. But we're Jews.
I want to be more Jewy. I always hang out with Jewish people.
We have a very diverse roster of people who come on the show. Except for the past two nights. It's been all Jews.
Gary Goldman, David Frum, John Stossel. Jews, everyone. Okay.
Yes, and these aren't like William Shatner Jews. These are hardcore Jews.
I have one Jewish question. When you meet another Jewish person, is there like a thing where you're like, hey, we're both Jewish, and you wink at each other a little bit?
Well, there's no wink that goes on. First of all, it's a mating dance.
It's a secret handshake.
In other words, I see somebody, I say that he might be Jewish. So I don't know for sure. Say I meet Periel. I say, hey, Periel Asherman. Oh, that's an interesting name, Periel. What kind of name is that? And she would say Israeli. Then I'd say, oh, you don't say. What part of... And just to make double sure, because there are non-Jews in Israel, albeit small in number, I might say, oh, so were you in the army? So, you know, you don't know right away.
So I've
like two black people know right away. We have to say, what do you do for a living? If I hear, oh, I'm actually a police diver, then I would say, okay, he's probably just Italian.
Yeah, yeah.
If he said, I'm a dermatologist, then I'd say he's probably Jewish.
So people always ask me, people always do what you're doing to her, and I always end up saying no. So what happens if I say yes?
Well, they say, where are you from? And you say, West Virginia. That's the end of the discussion.
If you say yes, you're going to hear some stuff. You need to say yes. Go all undercover. Right.
There's really nothing you're going to hear that you wouldn't necessarily hear anyway. The Holocaust did happen. We're not going to say, hey, can you believe these idiots think the Holocaust happened? It did. So there's really nothing you're going to hear anyway. But all right. But that said, I might bring up something Hebrew school because I think maybe you can relate to it.
Well, I have to tell you, I met somebody recently and we were talking about, I never met before, and we were talking about the Arab-Israeli conflict. And he was very like-minded to me, but then he came out with some remarks about the Palestinians, which I regarded as racist, you know, and I was turned off to him, but he wouldn't have said that if he didn't think I was Jewish. He thought for some reason that he was going to have a sympathetic ear to that kind of thing. Now, having said that, just for people listening, that's very unusual. Like, I very, very seldom have heard people talk like the way I heard this guy talk. But yeah, you know, people think that no one's listening. They will sometimes let their hair down in a way of all racism.
Yeah.
I'm sure if you could listen in on Keith Robinson's cell phone, I bet you hear some shit about white people. I'll tell you that right now. No question in my mind.
I think you could hear that regardless of whether you're listening to his cell phone.
Yeah. All right, we have to wrap it up.
Cool. I'm going to run to the VU.
Okay.
I'm going to run to the VU.
Thank you. We'll have you back. I actually had told Periel to put you on the schedule.
You're on my list. You're on my list.
Good night, everybody.
Good night.